Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Mercedes-Benz EVs revert to more conventional styling. BMW's EV sales are rising and VW's entry-level city cars are on the way. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what some reviewers have said about the updated Porsche Taycan after a track day here in Europe. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Thursday, 11th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story I can find every day. Hundreds, sometimes into the thousands of feeds and links and articles, so you don't have to. Give me 20 or 30 minutes and I'll give you everything EV to save you time. We go live at 5 p.m. UK, that's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get those shows as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with a call for help, actually, from anyone listening or watching the podcast. Ford is launching an EV social media campaign, and for the life of me, I cannot find it. Now, this is from the campaignlive.co.uk website. Locked behind a firewall, all I can find out is Ford is kicking off a social media marketing drive to address some common EV driving issues and showcase its lineup of EVs. There was a two-hour film created by Born Social for the ad, and it showcases driving experiences of various Ford's EV cars and the various drivers, footage shot by drones. But that's all I can find out. If this has shown up on your social media, or you can perhaps even find a link to it, I've searched for a long time today. I'd like to see what Ford are doing to explain EVs to newbies. Drop me a comment, let me know, and I'll feature it on a future podcast. Okay, we'll talk about one of the headline stories now, and that is the Mercedes-Benz EQS all-electric saloon version of the S-Class, now featuring an additional 51 miles of range, which is very, very welcome. WLTP, 511 miles of range now from the bigger battery. And it's introducing a new front-end design that resembles the brand's iconic radiator grille, which for our YouTube viewers, or those watching on X, I'll pop online right now. You can see the new front-end of the EQS is very much, well, it's an S-Class, isn't it? It's still got, obviously, the shape. They haven't redesigned the car, but the front-end, what they can do with some chrome inserts to mimic a grille. Gone is that super slick front area with the stars inside it, and back is the physical Mercedes silver physical emblem that sticks out of the bonnet. And so, going back to maybe a design that the customers of this vehicle were feeding back to the business, hey, we want it to look like this and not something a little bit futuristic. The update places the EQS in direct competition now with the BMW i7. It enhances the luxury interior options. It raises the game. Advanced driver assistance systems, standardizing the MBUX hyperscreen across the model now. Similar enhancements being made to the EQE, the EQE SUV, and the EQS SUV, that new design appearing on all of the EVA2 electric platform cars. It does look significantly different, and I think it looks kind of good, actually. Not that I have the money to spend on this car, but I kind of like it. There's nothing wrong with mimicking what came before. Don't they call it skeuomorphism? Like when we got our first iPhones back in the day, the notepad was kind of had like a leather effect, and the background was yellow with lines on it, almost like this is a notepad, this is how you use it. And the whole design of the iPhone was helping people along the way of, well, this is what a smartphone is and what you could do with it. And so this might be what Mercedes-Benz buyers need now, maybe forever, maybe just to hold their hand a bit to say, hey, it's okay, it looks like an S-Class, electric's okay. According to Holger Ensmann, the platform's chief project manager, these improvements under the skin, the engineering changes, and I'll get onto those in a moment if you keep watching and listening, are considered an upgrade before an upgrade. It's not a mid-cycle refresh rather than a comprehensive midlife facelift. This is just something that they're doing before they update the vehicle. Okay. A notable design element is the new front panel, which features these chrome plating strips, vertical slats cut into it as well. The bonnet-mounted Mercedes star, like I say, and it echoes the aesthetic of a more traditional styling. Under the skin, the EQS's range boost is achieved by a physically bigger battery pack now. 118 kilowatt hours, up from 108.4. That incorporates some improved cell chemistries. I can't find out exactly what's happened there and who their supplier is, maybe if it stayed the same or changed, but the battery chemistry, they say, is improved. To further extend the range, there is a new heat pump, which has been designed and now included as standard. All-wheel drive models have now the ability to disconnect the front motor when not in use, and energy recuperation, the regen effectiveness, has been doubled. For those willing to invest a little bit more, I'll pop a picture of the rear of the vehicle on for our YouTube viewers. The Pinnacle trim, alongside the executive interior package, has a new rear seat with 38 degrees of recline and the option to fold the front passenger seat forward for added leg space. And it's looking very much like a direct competitor to how luxurious the BMW i7 is in the back of it. Yeah, it looks actually quite nice. I wouldn't mind spending a few motorway miles being chauffeured in the back of my brand new Mercedes-Benz EQS. That'll do. With decreased reliance on brake discs because of advanced regen, Mercedes also introduced a maintenance feature to periodically engage the brakes to ensure their longevity. I'm sure not when you are driving, although how else would it do it? Just to clean off the discs and the pads? I don't know. But thinking about all things, unsurprisingly, some pretty hardcore engineering going into this vehicle. And this isn't even the midlife refresh of this. What do you think? Do you think it'll go down better with the traditional S-Class buyer and tempt people into more EV driving? Let me know. Let's stay with Mercedes-Benz, and the new C-Class EV has been spotted by spy photographers as featured here at carscoops.com. Interior spy shots reveal a dashboard dominated by the displays. Vertical screens, you'd say, looking at these pictures. A more affordable take, perhaps, on the MBUX hyperscreen that spans the cabin's width in the more premium Mercedes-Benz vehicles. The interior design hinting at shared components with the CLA EV, as we've seen already indicated by a similar screen setup in previous spy shots. Key interior features include the three-spoke steering wheel, the slim air vents, and the in-cabin camera as well, emphasizing a more minimalist design, I would say, in the C-Class SUV, EV. A design approach with some limited physical controls, probably looking at these pictures, but to describe them for our audio listeners, typical spy shots from the inside of a vehicle. Everything is covered up with black fabric, just the controls you really need to drive the vehicle. So you can't really tell, but it does seem like they're carrying on that minimalist look for the next generation of C-Class EV. While we're here with Mercedes, taking a quick look at their Q1 EV figures, now that the Q1 numbers are coming in for loads of the car makers, actually. And Mercedes-Benz Group reported sales of 568,000 vehicles, a 6% decrease in the first quarter of 2024. But we want to know about EVs and plug-in hybrids, don't we? Plug-in hybrid sales were up for Mercedes-Benz in Q1 during the period. Battery electric vehicle sales were 47,500. That is an 8% decline, partly due to some models ending, like the Smart 4.2, finishing off its lifestyle and life cycle, rather. All these numbers, by the way, year-on-year numbers, not quarter-on-quarter numbers. So the plug-in hybrids being up 6%, BEVs being down 8%. That is on the same quarter for the previous year to rule out seasonality. Electric vehicles were 10% of Mercedes-Benz total sales for the quarter. That increases to 19% when you include plug-in hybrids as well. Mercedes-Benz plans to launch 12 high-end vehicles this year, featuring 8 of the AMG models and the debut of the electric G-Class model as well. In Germany, they maintained their lead in the premium segment in the quarter, but there was a reduced BEV demand, as many are seeing, because of Germany suddenly ending their tax benefits. I'll pop links to those stories if you are a Mercedes-Benz fan in the show notes to read more. But what of their German rivals? We're talking a lot about BMW lately because their Neue Klasse vehicles coming next year and the tech underneath them and how good they're going to be. We think they're going to be anyway. But what about the here and now? Well, in the first quarter of this year, BMW had a 28% increase in EV sales year on year, outperforming the likes of Tesla and Volkswagen in terms of the trajectory of travel, obviously not in raw numbers against companies like Tesla, but we see Tesla were down in Q1 significantly, actually as a percentage. I just didn't mention that in the previous story. Mercedes-Benz EV sales, pure EV sales, were down greater as a percentage of their total than Tesla was in Q1. So everyone kind of lost their minds a little bit about how bad Tesla's Q1 was, but as a percentage, well, Mercedes was actually worse. I'm not seeing that reported today. The company BMW, back to this story, reporting the sale of 82,700 fully electric vehicle sales across their brands. That is, of course, BMW, Mini and Rolls-Royce, January to March this year. BMW had a big milestone as well. Their 1 millionth electric vehicle. That's incredible. Well done to everyone at BMW. 1 million electric vehicles now sold worldwide. The journey began, of course, with the BMW i3, debuting in November of 2013, I think. Correct me in the comments if I'm wrong. That got to about 100,000 sales in 4 years. Now BMW getting to their first million EV sales. I'll clarify whether that is plug-in or pure EV. Should have clarified that before I went live, actually. I'll clarify that on tomorrow's podcast now that I'm talking. Sometimes brain-to-mouth communication happens in real time, and I think things out loud. I'll find that out. But either way, congratulations to the team at BMW. They say the surge was down to popularity across the range, actually. The i4, iX1, i7, that had sales of 40% increase. I'll pop that on screen right now. Well, in contrast, Volkswagen witnessed a 3% decrease in EV sales. I won't go through all of VW's numbers, but that was 136,500 units globally of their EVs. They had declines in Europe and the US, but a big increase in China because of the pricing that they've done there, and an increase there which helped offset some of the declines for VW Group, at least in Europe and the US, in pure BEV sales. Volkswagen maintains optimistic notes in their press release about future EV sales and their growth in Europe. They do point out if they could make enough vehicles as quickly, they have a very strong order backlog of 160,000 units in Europe, and they're fulfilling those as quickly as possible. Staying with VW Group, actually, and their Spanish business, Cupra, now spun out of their SEAT brand. The Cupra Raval, R-A-V-A-L, the Raval, will kick off the production at Volkswagen Group's Spanish Martorell facility by the end of next year in 2025. That'll mark the group's first venture into the small electric vehicle segment. This is the equivalent VW ID2, if you like, the Cupra Raval. Cupra Born has certainly, I think, raised some eyebrows about how well that's done and how differently it was styled to the more perhaps soft and friendly ID3. So we can't wait to see what the Cupra designers do with their version of the ID2. That car, by the way, the ID2, starts production at the same location, but slightly afterwards, I believe, after the Cupra Raval. You would think perhaps a chunky small crossover variant called the ID2X would be coming as well, along with the Skoda Epic, which is such a great name, isn't it? Because how can the car not be epic if it's called the Epic? But EPIQ, obviously, because it's Skoda's EV naming convention. You got that before. I didn't need to explain it. I'm mansplaining now. Official timeline suggests the VW ID2's production begins early 2026. Volkswagen announcing in July 2023 the start of battery assembly operations at the Martorell plant. That's near Barcelona, by the way, alongside a €300 million investment for new battery assembly facilities spanning 64,000 square meters to support the manufacturing of their small city EVs and crossovers coming in 2025. What I often know when in embargoes are being lifted, either because I've heard about things or friends of mine have been on these test drives. I don't do that kind of stuff. I like to stay here in the studio and do the news day to day rather than going out and driving the cars because, you know, traveling around the world, as fun as it would be, not compatible with two little ones, 2 and 6, which is one little girl we adopted. Still one. Still keeping me awake at night. So those two keep me busy. So I like to stay at home and minimize travel these days. But people I know have been traveling around on the Porsche trips, and some of the journalists have been driving the Taycan Turbo GT. That is the four-door sedan. And no point having four doors because it eliminates the rear seats. The Porsche Taycan Turbo GT adds a carbon fibre storage bin to reduce weight by 49 pounds. That's about 22.2 kilograms. And I log on this morning and all of the publications that I follow have all put their stuff out exactly the same time. So we know the embargo lifted for all of those journalists that got the chance to go and drive the Taycan Turbo GT. This is one that I would have liked to have done, though, because Car Magazine, I love Car and Driver, the one I'm showing on screen right now. I think maybe Motor Trend, Jalopnik, they all published when they could. Same second, same minute of the day to get their reviews out there online. And they are all without question, exceptional. I've read all of them that I can find. There is nobody saying, well, Porsche have missed a beat here, here, here. Every one of those reviews, I'll do a bit of a meta review for you. They all say that the engineering here is just next level. The weight measures, the weight saving measures, like removing the driver's side charging port and its wiring. It uses thinner glass on the windscreen, eliminates the rear speakers. They don't even have floor mats in it. This is all about Porsche engineering performance. Now, there is the optional Visac package as well, and that further enhances the car by adding a large fixed rear wing, front and rear splitters, and underbody modifications as well. This is a free upgrade, and you don't get that word free with Porsche very often. It's normally sort of 10 to 15 grand to get the Visac package on their combustion stuff, but if you want this on your Taycan, they'll do that for you, and they'll add more aero to the car and take even more off of it. You can add about 175 pounds of downforce on the front axle, about 80 kilograms, and about 310 pounds of rear downforce, 140 kilograms, with the extra aero package on the Visac package, also including high-performance Pirelli P0 Trofeo RS Elect tyres, which many of the reviews I read today said that simply, apart from the car being, you know, different, having more aero, the change of tyres, if you're going to take this onto a track and really have this at its limits of performance, a key differentiator is having these custom tyres on it as well. Well, the Visac package equipped Turbo GT is lighter, 165 pounds. That's about 75 kilograms less than the standard Turbo GT. Not that you could call it standard. The Porsche Active Ride system, the damping, the active dampers available as an option otherwise, now standard on the Turbo GT. That went down very well in all the reviews that I read. And the Turbo GT features a two-motor powertrain, as always with the Taycan, but it has an upgraded silicon carbide rear inverter from 600 to 900 amps, which will take your peak power to 1,092 horsepower for two-second spurts and 1,020 horsepower for 10-second intervals, the enhanced powertrain allowing the Turbo GT to outperform any competitors on the Nürburgring or any track really, like the Model S Plaid and any other Taycan as well, increasing the top speed from 160 I think to 190 miles an hour during its record setting lap at the Nürburgring. The Turbo GT's battery temperature started at 57 degrees Fahrenheit, that is 13 degrees Celsius, and climbed to 144 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the Nürburgring lap, that is 62 degrees Celsius. That approaches a critical temperature thresholds of where the car will get to, but it still managed to maintain peak performance. That's what they're working on. So looking at all these reviews, obviously that everyone recognizes it's not a car that you and I will buy, and they said that for the handful of people that get this, it'll be, you know, a vehicle that you could drive every day as an everyday driver, or take to the, you can drive it to the track and have some fun if you are fortunate enough to have done very well in life and afford it. But the point I think all of them made was where EVs are now at in terms of the hardcore engineering going into them. EVs have always gone well in a straight line. There's no problem with the Model S Plaid going quickly. But it's when you turn the wheel that it separates the men from the boys a little bit. Or when you try and stop a car, for instance, Tesla will be the first to admit, yep, that the Plaid probably could do, obviously have brake upgrade packages, don't they? But with a little extra stopping power at times. And on the track, for instance, if you score points that way, and I have no interest in that really, but if you score points that way, then the Taycan Turbo GT is the ultimate EV smackdown to anything in combustion world. I'll pop a link to those stories in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Not really a car that you and I will buy. More of a conversation to have on the podcast today about engineering excellence. And that's why I'm so excited about it. Let's get back to the real world, should we, and talk about car prices decreasing for the real world buyer. And that would be the F-150 Lightning. Prices up to $5,500 off now following the Mustang Mach-E's discounting, which has worked, by the way. I'll get onto that in a second. Ford announcing a reduction in the prices of the F-150 Lightning as much as $5,500, according to a dealer bulletin. And this Green Car Reports article saying that starting on April the 5th, the XLT standard range version, the base model, was down by $2,000, which brings the price to $65,090. And that includes the destination fee, by the way. The Lariat extended range model is off $2,500, and that is now $79,090 with destination. The Flash extended range, this new model for this year, which is between XLT and Lariat, gets the largest reduction of $5,500. That is $70,090, including destination fees. And prices for the entry-level Pro standard range and the high-end Platinum extended range remaining the same. So the Pro model, which most people wouldn't get, is $57,000, and the top of the line is $87,090 with destination. Vehicles with the MSRP under $80,000, of course, in the US are eligible for tax credits. And Ford's recent pricing adjustments to the 2023 Mustang Mach-Es they had in inventory had a fantastic effect by leading Ford to maintain a sales increase, which I hope was widely reported. We certainly did. Good news for Ford. Well, welcome news for Ford in their EV project. And that's Ford, they maintained similar pricing for their 2024 model year and, of course, improved that mechanically. See yesterday's podcast or listen to yesterday's podcast for full details on that. Let's talk Alfa Romeo next, and they're introducing the Milano, their latest SUV crossover, and their first series production electric vehicle. I'll pop a picture on screen right now for our YouTube viewers. Giggity, look at that. The Milano is named after Alfa's hometown, serving as a modern successor to the Giulietta and the Mito hatchbacks, blending premium styling and qualities with, they say, the Alfa Romeo engaging driving experience. But it's an EV, so it won't break down every 5 minutes. That's a cliche, sorry. Alfas don't do that these days. But it also features a unique front grille design and the iconic Alfa Romeo emblem adapted for the electric model, built on the same platform as the other cars in the family. Citroën C4, Fiat 600, Jeep Avenger, what am I forgetting? Peugeot 2008. And so, you know the specs of this. If you're a regular listener or viewer of this podcast, you know what they do with that vehicle. They put a 54 kilowatt hour battery in. It'll do about 250 miles of range. It'll peak charging at 100 kilowatts. It has a 154 brake horsepower motor now. They made those a little bit more powerful. It's fine-tuned as well, they say, for some Alfa Romeo performance and a sporty drive. Look, they are not knock-your-socks-off specs for the Alfa, but that's what they had on the shelf, and that's what they've gone with, and the styling of it, I think, looks absolutely cracking. Can't wait to find out the pricing. Talking of pricing, we know the pricing of the Cybertruck is either $100,000 or $120,000, depending on whether you're getting the Cyberbeast or not. But what if you are simply unable to wait for your turn in queue? Well, we know that you can get hold of a Cybertruck or a Cyberbeast if you cash in some referral points, if you are well known, if you're a celebrity. We've seen plenty of celebs getting out of theirs. I'm sure you can put a call in and it's in Tesla's interest to get a few extra column inches of publicity. You can obviously jump the queue if you are the right person, but for the rest of us mere mortals, you have to stay in line unless you've got the cash to splash, in which case this Inside EVs report pointing out that they followed the recent auction of a Tesla Cybertruck at Sotheby's, the online auction house, and it sold for $262,500. The bidding started at $75,000, but quickly went up to over $250,000. This Cybertruck had 50 miles on the clock. It was the Foundation Series, originally priced $120,000, and the Foundation Series package adds $20,000 to the $100,000 Cyberbeast. I think I got that the right way around. In a separate event, a dual motor Cybertruck was auctioned on Cars and Bids, and it stopped bidding at $158,000, not reaching its reserve price. And so, if you have one and you want to make a quick buck, by the look of it, people are still paying silly money to get their hands on a Cybertruck. The, you know, other OEMs, car makers, whether, because I'm not sure Tesla are in the business, as some of the car makers do, they will just ship their vehicles to their competitors. That's happened. And your competitors ship you their vehicles to tear down because you're going to buy them anyway. I don't think Tesla's ever done that. I'm not sure, but I'm not deep enough into the world of Tesla to know anybody to say, hey, do you send your vehicles to your competitors just as a matter of course? I don't think they do. So I think they would be bought by by other car makers, and $250,000 is just the price that you would have to pay to get one of those and tear it down. Or maybe this is a wealthy individual or business who just wants to own it because. Either way, congratulations on your Cybertruck. You just couldn't wait, could you? Let's talk about EV battery recycling now, and something that I will often say to people if I can spend some time in the comments, and people saying, well, EVs, well, you know, they last 5 minutes and then you've got to scrap them and change the batteries. And yes, plenty of Teslas over the years, these million mile Teslas, they've had like four batteries and three powertrains, but either way, but many EVs will obviously do hundreds of thousands of miles on the same battery. But I always point out to people, I'm spending every day looking at the news for you on this podcast. There are so many EV battery recycling schemes cropping up around the world, some of it with incentives and funding, and some of it without. But new research, which I'm going to have in my locker because I can now put some hard numbers to what I've been telling people, which is there simply isn't the feedstock for all of this recycling. There is no need to worry about a single EV battery ever going to landfill forever because it's just too valuable. No one is putting any EV battery into landfill, despite what the doomsayers and the EV haters want to talk about. That is never, ever going to happen. In fact, this data, which has been picked up by the Driven.io website, says that new research indicating a burgeoning demand for end-of-life EV batteries because of their critical mineral content. ABI research predicts that by the end of the decade in 2030, just in the US alone, there'll be four times more EV battery recycling capacity schemes out there than the feedstock, than the supply of end-of-life batteries. EV batteries are lasting way longer than people thought. People are learning about how to use batteries. Since this podcast over 2,000 episodes and, you know, 5-6 years old, I am so psyched about what I've seen. I've loved learning on this journey. And if you've been on this journey with me on this podcast for a day or maybe all those years, and you probably learned, you probably taught me stuff as well. I'm just an enthusiast about the industry, about what we learn about batteries, how to charge them, how to rapid charge, what the charge curve is, all those kind of things. And people are learning, well, how to treat their car batteries, when to slow charge them, when to fast charge them, the limit to charge them up to if they're not doing a road trip the next day, how to leave your car stored. All of that. It's just so exciting that loads of people have picked up on this over the years. And clearly, batteries are lasting very long in EVs. It's not like the mobile phone or laptop battery that doesn't have sophisticated thermal management to never get too cold or too hot to be charged in just the right way. So EVs are going on and on and on and on. Recycling facilities will have the capacity to process 1.3 million EV battery packs by 2030. That's annually, by the way. But they simply won't have enough to put into the system. What a lovely problem to have. Not great for these businesses that are investing. I fully appreciate that. But another example that one of the core arguments of people, which is, you know, the doomsayers and the EV haters, that these batteries don't last a very long time and that they go into landfill at the end. They are lasting a very long time. So long, in fact, that it's disrupting the recycling projects, which have already been established for a long time. And there's more of them coming online. And there simply aren't enough batteries. There's more recycling capacity than we know what to do with. Well, it's always interesting to see which countries, which states have various incentives to help you go EV. One of those I remember reporting on years ago was Cincinnati, but now they are ending one of their nice EV perks. So for my listeners there, you may want to know that Cincinnati is ending its free EV parking program this summer. Started back in 2008, it aimed to encourage the adoption of all electric vehicles, with over 2,000 vehicles registered for free parking on city-owned meters. The city will stop accepting applications in April. The scheme ends in July on the first of the month. It's a shame that's ending. Maybe it's done its job, but we do like those little perks, don't we? Parking for free, driving in, you know, taxi lanes, stuff like that. But this one is one that's coming to an end. And on a similar tip, one of the things which is being talked about more and more is how do we replace the revenue lost from the combustion cars that are leaving the road. I know this may seem like a negative story, but this was an inevitability. This is actually a piece of good news because it shows the maturation of the EV market. Pennsylvania is considering a fee for EVs to offset tax revenues. The proposed bill introduced by State Representative Ed Nielsen suggests an annual fee of $125. Which will increase over the next 5 years. The rationale is to compensate for the decrease in gas tax income, which traditionally finances road and bridge construction and maintenance. Let's go to New York City, where curbside charging is one of those places in the US that is a big part of the conversation. Big part here, because obviously we're a small country on a small island, and many people live in areas that are, you know, the housing stock is terrace housing. You park on street. We just don't have physically the layout that my US listeners might be used to say, hey, we don't all have driveways here. We park on the street. And that is more of a city problem in the US than for the majority of people who live in, you know, suburbia. You've got, you know, bigger homes and more space around them. We don't have that luxury here. We're kind of living on top of each other in certain places. New York City, one of those. And the initiative to install public curbside EV charging stations began in 2021 under a pilot program set to conclude in July this year, this pilot program. So how has it done? Well, I can tell you, according to Charged EVs, very well. Strong demand. New York City's DOT, Department of Transportation, and Consolidated Edison are seeking to extend the pilot for another year with a larger post-pilot rollout. It has worked well. Con Edison's 100 EV chargers on street have a 72% utilization rate. And that's actually very good. And I'll tell you why. Because people with combustion cars block them around 20% of the time. So to have a 72% utilization rate is very good, considering certain people just use the space anyway. But that's not a problem, because the NYPD have issued so far 2,200 parking tickets for that clear violation and the obstruction. The chargers have also exceeded their reliability targets with a 99.9% uptime rate in 2024, but that's not the entire historical data, so maybe they had to get some teething problems sorted. But certainly for this year, pretty much the chargers work all of the time, anytime you try and use them. There's a maintenance strategy, they say, and regular checks and alarms. And one of the key things I always talk about with people with charging, they have built a dedicated parts depot in New York City for quick component replacement. One of the key things when I know, you know, people who install chargers, for instance, or put chargers in the ground, one of those conversations, they, you know, in choosing which company to go with, which hardware company to go with, it's why companies like Kempower, I think, are very popular, because there might be some additional costs there, because Kempower insist on having a parts supply of things on the van, as it were, and things in the depot. Now, that might mean that there's an increased cost to put those chargers in the ground, because you've got to carry spares if you're going to operate the Kempower stuff. But surely that's better than other charging operators where you call up and go, it's broken. They're like, oh, yeah, it's a power block. We're waiting 6 weeks for a new one from Austria. And you're like, all right, okay. So that's one of the keys to the uptime in New York City. And finally, a bit more market data trickling in from China, following on from yesterday's podcast, and that is the March EV sales figures for China, where BYD leads, and BYD leads considerably, by the way. BYD claiming the top spot in China's EV market for March with a 36.6% market share with 260,000 units sold. For our YouTube viewers, I'll make that graph a little bit bigger so you can see that on screen right now. Overall, BYD obviously have plug-in hybrids and EVs in their NEV figure. In fact, NEV includes hydrogen as well, but they don't sell any. But that figure is about 50-50 with EVs and plug-in hybrids for BYD. Tesla China had a particularly rough March in terms of market share. They're not far ahead of some of their competitors, and they're a long way behind BYD, for instance. Those numbers I'm talking about with BYD include both passenger and commercial vehicles they sold, by the way. That's a 147% increase on February, a 46% increase year on year for the month of March. Total retail sales for passenger NEVs in China for March was 710,000 units of passenger NEVs, and it's about a 60-40 split in the Chinese market of 60-40 in favour of BEVs versus plug-in hybrids. 710,000 units sold in China. That is a 30% increase from the same month on the previous year, and an 80% increase on February. But like I say, with Chinese New Year moving around from year to year, it's always best to try and smooth it out with some quarterly numbers. But either way, Tesla did secure the second position in the market with sales of 89,000 China-made cars in March, 26,000 vehicles destined for export. Thank you, as always, to everyone who supports this show on Patreon, because you get this show on the air. And this show will always be free on audio platforms, by the way. If you subscribe to the audio show, you can do that on any podcast, whatever podcast app you use, whether it's Apple or YouTube Music, Spotify, the big ones, and I use Overcast on my iPhone. But either way, just search EV News Daily. And you'll see the logo, you'll find it. You've got the archive in there as well, and new shows every single day. They have some adverts in to help support the podcast, but it really is the Patreon legends who get this show on the air and pay my wages these days. Thank you, Patreon. Our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East. National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel. Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map. And Lease Plan Electric Moments, all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.